Hi, glad you're still with us. This is the fourth and final side of Lesbian Frequency Number 1. We start with excerpts from Sydney's interview with Maxine Feldman in Minneapolis on January 1st, 1983. Maxine is a lesbian feminist comedian and musician and is a dyke who's been bucking the system, the mainstream, and fighting for all of us since the 50s.
Maxine, you've been associated with women's music from the very beginning. What generally do you feel the state of women's music is now? What's your role in women's music today?
I feel women's music is getting back to going to be lesbian music again, which it's always been. I mean, I think women's music is just a name so it's passable. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have a title when I started performing, and Robin Flower and Debbie Lemke, we didn't have a title called Women's Music. I came into being around 1974, 75, and someone trying to find what it is that we were doing. We did it just as we breathed. It was political. Mm-hmm. It was talking about our situations. I think it's lesbian music. I mean, a lot of women, because I think there's still a lot of self-hatred within our community. And that's why they won't use the word lesbian, they won't use the word lesbian music, and they feel it's alienating, and I think that's bullshit, because I feel terrific when I'm with an audience. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing, everyone will say the word lesbian, and even when I play in, quote, straight clubs, I do the same material, because I know that it's sometimes hard for a lesbian to come maybe for the first time to an all-women's gathering, mm-hmm. but they can come in under the guise. And the straight people that are there, it's also consciousness raising to them. I still see it as a very much political tool, an enjoyment, but a political tool for getting things changed and done. And my role, I see it, I want to be a very old dyke singing. I want to be taken off the stage feet first. I have no visions of ever being one of your glamour girls or one of your top. I just want to be steadily employed and keep doing music. Keep connecting with the communities as they change and evolve, and as I see more and more coming out. In 1969, 1970, 71, 72, 73, you played the same 50 people. Now there are gatherings of 8 to 10,000. Mm-hmm. That's a change. Mm-hmm. And that's a great change. And that people are recognizing who they are. I wish any of the other performers who wish to go into that top 40 or commercial, terrific, go for it. But don't denigrate where you come from and don't put down, because it's the lesbian audience. Mm-hmm. And that's who's really making you where you are. And so I just like to hear what's going on with the lesbians, and that's where my music comes from. And that's who I really enjoy playing to. I don't care about playing to straight audiences. Fuck them, they got enough music as it is.
So you think things are getting better this way, that it's coming around again to being more lesbian identified?
It's starting to swing around again, because I noticed that even this year at Michigan, women were very angry that they didn't even hear the word lesbian from the stage. And when I finally got to MC at night on Sunday night, that's why I had everyone do the lesbian chant, and use the word. But it was really gratifying to see that women were very angry that it wasn't being said. If one place, Michigan, of all the safe places to be, you can be the most outrageous and say the most outrageous thing you want. Mm-hmm. That's where you can really do it. Mm-hmm. In the safety of your sisters. If you can't do it there, then what the hell are you doing up there on the stage anyway? Mm-hmm. I can turn on the radio and hear what you're singing about trees and birds. Whoopee. Does that sound nasty? Well, it is.
It's too bad we had to wait till Sunday to happen, though, but maybe next year it'll start on Friday. So you say that your music is part of a political struggle for you. Mm-hmm. What is your struggle for?
What is my struggle for? For our rights. Mm-hmm. So we are not equal yet by any means. In this country, I know that there are a gay rights law passed here in Minneapolis, Milwaukee. Madison also has a gay, but the rest of the country, they're still taking away our jobs, our children, discriminating against us, hating our guts, and I'm forgetting the beginning of the question, Sydney. I'm drifting off. So give me the beginning of the question again.
The question is, both what are you fighting for, and how is music part of that fight for you?
Well, I think you can put in a 3-minute song a great political message more than an hour's speech. Mm-hmm. They're not, you know. I think music is one of the great tools because you can move people very quickly, mm-hmm. and sometimes maybe they don't understand the words, and also humor. Comedy is a wonderful tool. People laugh, get things out. And I'm working for us. That's, you know, my chosen thing. And I will be very happy the day when I don't have to sing Angry at Us anymore, except as a nostalgic piece. You know, saying, remember we had to sing this? You know? You'll see the biggest grin on my face. But we still have a lot to go. And we still, I mean, getting rid of self-hatred and getting self-respect and self-love is a continual battle. But I see more and more young women coming out who are into it and also having that vision of what it was like previous to 1969. Mm-hmm. I never want to go back to that. Mm-hmm. Never, never.
But when you say what it was like previous to 1969, that was what it was like for you. And I feel very out of touch with the majority of lesbians, probably, who are still in very much in the same world, the same mafia bar reality.
Mm-hmm. I mean, for all the lesbians that we see at Michigan, using that as sort of a focal point that many people internationally come to every year, for, say, the 8,000 to 10,000 that are there, they're probably triple or quadruple that amount mm-hmm. who don't even know about it. And who would say, what the fuck do I want to be with a bunch of women for? I mean, these are lesbians, yeah. You know? So talk, you know. But more and more keep coming in. Mm-hmm. But there's still going to be those, you know, we're just a microcosm of, say, a larger society in a sense. Mm-hmm. And there are going to be those who think that we are really ridiculous. I mean, just as there are, believe it or not, lesbians who voted for Reagan. Mm-hmm. Hard as that may be to believe. But more than likely, they are not going to be listening to this particular tape, and I wish they would. But they see us, or they see us in gay pride parades, lesbian mm-hmm. events, and like, why do they want to do that? How disgusting. How could, you know, why would they want anyone to know? Why, you know, what I do in bed is nobody's business, because they're still defining themselves by their sexuality, not as a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. They're buying everything that the straight, quote, society has to say about us.
Can you tell me, I know you talked about it last night at your concert, but can you tell me about what it was like saying that for the first time in public?
Terrifying. Terrifying. I mean, I thought by even saying the word queer, I mean, that was pretty heavy. This was previous to Stonewall, you know. And I was real, the people in the bar where I was performing it, they literally stopped drinking and they looked, and some were in shock. No one booed at me, but they didn't know quite how to handle what I was saying. And yet they knew what I was saying was the truth in speaking of that particular time period. And the kitty cat wants to eat my burger. I'm sorry, tofu eaters, I do eat meat. there's nothing closet about my burgers. But it felt so good to me. I mean, I knew, even though the owner, as I told you, you know, said, you're making the people think and not drink, and that's not what gay entertainment is about. Mm-hmm. My instinct and my gut told me I was doing something right, but I didn't know what. But obviously it was in the air. Christopher Street was in the air. Stonewall was in the air. Mm-hmm. Something was going to happen. You know, because, I mean, I sat in at Woolworths in 1959 for Black Civil Rights, and I kept saying, what about my rights? What about me? You know, hey. And I was so glad that when it did happen. But it was real scary, and I didn't think anyone would like the song. And even when I first played it years ago, after 69, there was still much resistance to it. It's, as it gets older, it gets more and more acceptance, even though it's an oldie but moldy song. It seems that the communities are much more open to it now than they have ever been before. And maybe that's because we are validating our past.
you know, even though it's more recent, I'm not talking about our far past, you know, but that, hey, yeah, there is something being said where I think maybe at the time when I was doing it, it was speaking too directly to too many people's lives, mm-hmm. you know, and was too personal. Mm-hmm. And for me, it, as you can tell, I become transformed every time I do that song. Mm-hmm. It just drifts over me, and the anger is still there because we don't have our rights. And it's also a way of telling the new ones what it was like. It's also validating the ones who were older, who knew, who lived that. And also saying, yeah, I'm proud to be a lesbian. It hasn't been easy, but I'm damn proud. And isn't it wonderful we're all here together? And the best thing, and why I asked the audience to do the last word with me, lesbian, is that might be the only time in the whole year they might say that word. But when you sing it in numbers or say it in numbers, if you could hear it how I hear it up on the stage, it's exciting. It's exciting. And for me, it's a song that I'm still not bored with. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I ever will be. But as I said, I can't wait for the day when I can just say, well, I'm just going to do this one, you know. And all we have our rights and our own dyke homes and everything like that. And everything is perfect. You're really into my burger, huh, kid? I have a little kitty cat here who keeps stealing at my burger.
Yes, there are a couple in this house.
It seems like you've always been ahead of your time in a lot of ways, and you still are. I mean, you've been talking about being a Jewish dyke and being a fat mm-hmm. dyke for years and years and years, and women are just sort of catching on in the last couple of years.
I think a lot has to do with self-hatred, mm-hmm. body image, Jewish. I mean, I don't know where it was instilled into me such pride. But there's always been that question of the assimilation. I mean, many people, you know, they lost their last names when they came across Ellis Island because the people here could not. I said, oh, your name is Ashkenazi, huh? Well, you'll be known as Ash from now on. I have a friend named Charleston, and she said she doesn't even know what her grandfather's name really was, but it wasn't Charleston. It was a Russian name. The guy couldn't say it or pronounce it, so he wrote down Charleston. It's probably something like Chaletsky or, you know, Charwananoff or who knows, you know, but it became Charleston. And also because there was something in my being that when women were changing their last names, when the River Moonbeam Sundance time period. And women, I think, you know, if women wants to take a name and rename herself, I think that's terrific. But there was also something that struck me about that it always seemed to be the Jewish names that had to change. Mm-hmm. And there's always been this great thing of assimilate, because this country is basically anti-Semitic. The world is anti-Semitic. Once again, that is showing itself, whether it's the bombing of temples in Paris, whether it's, we've had a lot of defamation of temples in the Boston, Massachusetts area, all over the country. There's two bottom lines I know in this country and in the world for myself. One, no matter who they say they are, whether it's the left, whether it's the No Nukes group, or anyone else, when it comes down to the bottom line, they're still going to call me a dyke. And the other thing I know they're going to call me is a kike. And I just say, my name is Maxine Feldman, and it's all they have to hear and take one look at me. And they may hear the name, but their hatred and what their prejudices were brought up with, those two words, even if they don't say them, I can feel them. I mean, like, I'm real angry at the left. I've worked with the left for many years. I don't march with them anymore. I haven't seen them yet march in our gay prides, our lesbian prides, our take back the nights. But they want us to march. I mean, I don't want to die by nuclear power. Please. I don't want to. Please. I'm not that butch. But I don't see them working for us. And once again, it's women putting their issues aside for the boys' toys.
I was watching last night. I was thinking, well, you're doing stuff now that I would be really scared to do. And that the hardest thing for me would be to get out and talk as much about sex as you do on stage. And which I think is really great when you do it, you know, but it's scary.
Scary, isn't it? Sex, politics, and what's the other one? Religion.
Yeah.
The three big ones. Well, politics, I thought, you know, I do. Sex, it's taking the because I think in our community, in all communities probably, but in our community, I've noticed we have a terrible time with intimacy. And intimacy is just not going to bed with someone and making love with them, but really opening oneself. And I find we really have a very hard time. I think all people do. But I've noticed it more and more, even talking with other dykes across the country, that their frustrations are like, either they're terrified to be intimate with someone or someone who they want to be intimate with, and we're not even talking sexual. That person just closes up on them. And I fear if I can just keep throwing out some sexual, to get some of the bugaboos out, to get the, okay, you need a vibrator to get off, use it. If that gives you an orgasm, honey, use it. If you masturbate better than someone making love, then do it. Don't be afraid, but don't be afraid to say that to the person you're with. Also getting people saying, well, if I can't make you come, then nothing else can. And defining our whole selves by that, we should move beyond that point. You know? And so by using, I mean, it's trying to get a certain relaxedness about it. I mean, like, the greatest thing at Michigan is when you look around for the first time for many people, it's like seeing all those different bodies. Or maybe you get to feel a few bodies. I don't know. A little Braille method of feeling them. Of all those different bodies, all the different shapes, all the different abilities, disabilities, temporarily able, and saying, God, I thought I was the only one whose pubic hair extended beyond her crotch. You know what I mean? Or I thought I was the only one that had hair on my belly. Or the only, you know? And you look around there and you see the most incredible shapes and sizes. And suddenly those who are very, say, into, well, thin is in and that's the only. And you start looking around and you see these wonderful curves. And this. And I have seen women who have hated, you know, I have to lose weight. They're like maybe 5 pounds over. They don't know what it's, they have no idea what it's like to try to go buy clothes that don't fit. They will never know. But they have that self, once again, that self-hatred. You have to be a certain size. You have to look a certain way. Your hair has to be a certain way. All the people that curly hair wanted straight hair. All the people that straight hair wanted curly hair. And you look around and you say, oh my goodness, this is incredible. And I think that has been a wonderful learning tool, because I've noticed a certain more relaxedness about the body. We're still uptight. But we are certainly more relaxed now than we have ever been before. Mainly because you go there and see 8,000 naked bodies.
Mm-hmm. And even if you don't take off your shirt this year, maybe 3 years
the
down
next
the line,
year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, maybe you take off your shirt and you don't take off your pants. You know, or someone has their period. Oh, well, you know, okay. But there's a lot of women there who are having their periods. There's a lot of women there. You see breasts of different sizes. Women who have had mastectomies, some one mastectomy, women who are in wheelchairs, women who are blind, women who are deaf, and for the first time in our lives, because this is not allowed to us in a regular society, I can talk to any of those women can talk to me, and I can say, well, how come you're in this chair? You know, we were taught never to ask and also never to look, you know, and never, please, that's very rude. But there I can know, and also I see that in Michigan we are building things that so there are ramps, so that there are programs in Braille, so there are many different things that are not offered to us in the real world, quote unquote, the real world, the straight world.
And yet many disabled lesbians say that sign is totally accessible to them, really.
Yeah, but it's a start. I mean, it's not going to be perfect. We're not in utopia yet, you know? But our community is the only community that takes everyone as much as possible into consideration. When you think about it, what concert can you go to of any of the boy rock and roll stars that's going to have an interpreter? Or that's even maybe put on a thing wheelchair accessible, or even care about that? Nowhere, nobody, no how. So I think that's one of the things. And back to the sexual thing is that we're getting used to looking at each other's bodies. They've been wonderful cunt coloring books. T. Corinda, some fabulous erotic photography. That's for us. It's not male versions of what lesbians, quote, do in bed. You know? And so it's a whole different way of looking at things. I think it's wonderful. I love looking around Michigan. I think Michigan is one of the most sensual. I don't see that much sexuality there, but I see a lot of massage and a lot of hugging and a lot of warmth, which is more intimacy, but people are still terrified of And we all have problems with it because of the way we were brought up. You know, if you get to know me too well, you might not like me because I don't like myself. You know, that whole kind of syndrome. And I don't want to open myself up to you too much because if I do, you can hurt me. But I think as lesbians, we're going to reach it way before the straight world does.
It's so easy to get impatient, you know. Expect so much of each other.
I slowed down a little. I still have high expectations for. I go to my grave believing. I hope so. I mean, there's a cynical part to me, and there's a part of now, and there are days when I go, oh, fuck this shit. Who needs this? This is the most ridiculous. God damn them. And I only realize it's because I love the women so much that it hurts so much also. When you don't get something, you know, we have such high expectations for each other. If we don't, if it doesn't get validated or something doesn't happen, it hurts more. Men can't hurt me. I don't care about them. Straight world can't hurt me. It can deny me things, but it can't hurt me. Not the way my sisters can. Because my heart is open. You know, and we also don't tend to protect ourselves as much around. But I also have to remember, some women are not my sisters either. Mm-hmm. You know? And that women can be people too. Sad.
I'm in love with lesbians. I am one, and which it also has a lot to do, I think, with self-love. Learning to love myself each year much better than before. And coming from a point of self-hatred, you know. And I've grown tremendously, and I've seen the community grow tremendously, too, and I feel like we're growing together.
This section was excerpted from Sydney's hour-long interview with Maxine. Parts were recorded by Marge Schneider. The entire interview can be obtained from Radical Rose or Women's Bookstores for $5.25 postpaid in a plain mailer.